everyone. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thanks so much for being here. All right. This Go Show, I want to preface this Go Show for three different levels of Buddhist students of Buddhism. Beginner, intermediate, advanced. Okay? For the beginner, this Go Show basically covers every aspect of Buddhist teachings that you could possibly want to know about, from Nichiren all the way back to Shakyamuni. That's a pretty big statement, but here's why I make it. This Go Show was written to Sarenbo, our buddy. Sarenbo is a very educated in Buddhism monk of the Tendai school, and he was exiled to Sado Island along with Nichiren, not at the same time and not for the same reasons, but that's where Nichiren and he met. And after listening to Nichiren talk about Buddhism, discuss Buddhism and how it is to be practiced in the latter day, and Nichiren's insights, Sarenbo converted from Tendai to Nichiren. Now, given that, you can well imagine that the dialogue between these two men was quite scholarly. In other words, there was a great deal of assumed knowledge. When Nichiren would speak to Sarenbo, he knew that Sarenbo was very educated in Buddhism. Not only was he very educated in Buddhism, but he was educated in Buddhism through the same lineage that Nichiren was. The Tendai school was very respected through the lineage of Dengyo, as we've spoken before, from the Tendai Chinese school, which was very reformative and deeply involved in the 3,000 realms in a single thought moment. And so Nichiren was talking to somebody who was very allied in his thinking. So, for those of you who are beginners, don't let this dissuade you. The reason I want to say this for beginners as an important, this could be the first Go Show you read, but you're going to read it differently than an intermediate or an advanced student. For the same reason that this Go Show is different than others, in that it's a letter to Sarenbo, not a beginning disciple of Nichiren's. So if you're a beginner, I'm going to try to take this apart to help you understand, because without the knowledge base, it's just going to sound like a lot of, it's going to be, in Shakyamuni's words, difficult to understand. Okay. But it really isn't that difficult. The problem that what makes it difficult is that you don't have the knowledge base. So, two things for beginners. Read this Go Show. But, and I've done this myself, it may be that one sentence that you read will require that you look up half of the words in the sentence. Do that. That's called study. And that will greatly and rapidly expand your understanding of Buddhism and I will further say that that understanding is really about your teaching yourself. It will be about your gaining insights so that the next time you run into those same words, you'll go, I get that. I get that. I see how that makes sense now. Okay? So that's the nature of study for those of you starting out. So don't shy away from this Go Show because it is a tremendous study aid. You could start from this Go Show and learn everything you need to know about Buddhism. That's how confident I am in you, okay? For those of you who are intermediate, you've been practicing for a while, you've been studying for a while, a lot of things are gelling for you. This Go Show might be a bit of a check because a lot of times anything we learn in life as humans, we start to, things start to gel and we start to understand concepts and we start to make internal decisions as to what we understand about something. Only later, sometimes much later, to find that our understanding was either lacking some nuance or kind of off the mark and we have to adjust. But the brilliant thing about that is when we adjust, suddenly 100 other things make total sense that used to kind of slide by. So for you intermediates, this is an amazing Go Show to really check your progress and see where you are. This will be a Go Show of tremendous clarification for your intermediate student. For those of you who are advanced, you're going to hear language that you're familiar with, but that's going to nail things down in a far less obtuse manner. And for the advanced student, that can also be a check, but it'll also served, I think, as a very connecting teaching because, as I was alluding to, it's a very broad Go Show, but it is very, very, everything leads to center. Everything leads to, this is a very comprehensive and yet very straightforward discussion of what is Myoho Renge Kyo, what is Buddhism, what is enlightenment. It's all in this Go Show, but unlike the Flower Garland Sutra, which has tremendous formality and exploration and expedient means, you see, because it's written to Sairinbo, all of that is assumed knowledge. So for us in the latter day, in the modern day, this Go Show, and it's not terribly long, this Go Show is more about the proof or our actual experience of Buddhism. That's why I compare it to the Flower Garland, but in a much more one-to-one, you know what I'm talking about way, instead of trying to introduce these concepts, it's a discussion of these concepts. So whereas all those videos that I did, with like 27 parts on the opening of the eyes, that was very much about the practice and the teaching. This is about the proof. This is about actual mundane Buddhist practice. It ties it all together, of course, but hopefully that helps all of you as we enter this. And I'm going to do my best. I don't want to speak ad nauseum on all of these things. But if you're a beginner and you're listening to this, I'm going to try to make as much sense of it as I can without getting too long-winded. But again, I exhort you to take, you don't have to listen to the whole thing. As soon as you run into something that's like, what the heck is that? Go find out. use the internet, use the books that you have, use other videos that I've put out. Look and search for definitions that will bring you insight, and then come back to it. Reread it and then read further. Or as a popular method of study, read past what you don't understand, because there's always more information that may make that what you didn't understand kind of gel for you. But make notes. If you have a book, you know, make a mark in the column. I need to go back and look into this more deeply. Do that. It's very important that you do that, because that's how this teaching becomes your teaching for your enlightenment. Okay? So, without further ado, the entity of the wonderful and difficult to understand law. The entity of the wonderful and difficult to understand law. Right away in the title, we're all familiar with wonderful and difficult to understand law. Oh yeah, we're all familiar with that. But what is the entity of it? And right off the bat in the title, what we're confronting is the entirety of the Dharma. That's the entity. So what's the Dharma? Right? The fact that it's an entity at all is a little bit slippery. Because entity's a funny word. In some ways, it is exactly what we talk about leaving behind in Buddhism, and that is identification. You can say this is an entity of a cup with an entity of coffee in it that I'm going to drink into the entity that is Sylvain, right? So entity can be mixed up with a lot of thingness. But for the purposes of Buddhist study, I want you to think of entity as a simile of suchness. And that's a word you confront all the time in Buddhism. Things have a suchness. And if there's a suchness, then there is nidana. If there is nidana, then there is samsara. If there is samsara, then you have thinking, acting, physical beings who within them have an entity. So entity gets mixed in between physical and manifestation, because manifestation has a tendency and condition. And anything that has a tendency and condition has a way of being. And that way of being is a suchness. Things have a tendency and condition as they go through nidana, as they go through manifestation from potential, no suchness, through development of suchnesses to create a manifestation. Suchnesses, tendencies, and conditions, right? If we talk about ice melting, there are several things that conceptually we need to understand. That ice is an entity, that water is an entity, that ice melting is the entity shifting through tendencies and conditions. And the entity might simply be cold. Cold, to be cold, to have cold, to be in cold is a suchness. Follow? So what is the entity in that suchness? So this is an important way of thinking, if you gravitate to science, you might say that you have material matter, and we know that both Einstein and Maxwell showed that energy is equal to mass, and it's equal to frequency. So mass and frequency, you could say, are entities, but they're really manifestations. Manifestations of what? The entity of energy in different tendencies and conditions. The math, the nidana, the formations from energy to other. That's nidana for you mathematicians or physicists. And I would say there's a strong argument to be made that those who are researching quantum fields and quantum gravity, they are digging through nidana. And that's why it's so difficult for them to ascertain what's going on. And the question we hear a lot is something from nothing. You know, Lawrence Krauss wrote a book, The Universe from Nothing. Because nothing isn't nothing. Nothing is potential. But they don't use that word. They're more nitsy-pitsy about having a... Right now, you know, science swings between being very physically oriented and very energetically oriented. There are other words you could use. Right now, in recent decades, we've been very fascinated with the physical, but that's starting to deteriorate, and science is starting to realize that there is pre-physical, that there is something, there is an engine of life and reality that is not physically based. But boy, it's really hard to let go of that idea, because we're human, samsaric, and we latch on to thingness. But before there can be a thing, there has to be suchness, there has to be tendencies and conditions, because things precipitate from that. And if they precipitate from tendencies and conditions, what are the tendencies and conditions of initially? That is the big question. And that is what Buddhism answers. So, when you think of that huge idea, personally, what is the entity of you? It's not your image, it's not your haircut, it's not your position, it's not your name, it's not your eye color. None of those are your entity. Your entity is something supremely fundamental, and it's your suchness, and your suchness comes ahead of your being. Your being, listen to the word, being of what? What are you being? See, I, Sylvain, I am, words, this is going to sound silly, but go, run with me. Right now, I am B, I be Sylvain. Now, again, moments later, I be Sylvain. Every single moment, I be Sylvain. So I am being. Ing just being a continuation of tendencies and conditions in each and every moment. But that ball started rolling when? When I was born? When I was in utero? When I joined the sperm and the egg in the womb to be Sylvain? Because I'm a third entity. I'm not my mom. I'm not my dad. I came through their combination of fluids, but I'm something else. Even my DNA, or deeper than that, but let's use DNA, is different. I contain a lot of common because I'm a mixture of them, but I'm separate. I'm something different. I'm a third entity. So Buddhism is about that entity. What is pure entity in you and I? What is that fundamental that goes well beyond taste, touch, eyesight, ears, tendencies and conditions, right? So all of that is preparatory for the first, and this whole thing's in a Q&A format, which you're familiar with. Nichiren gets right into it at the heart of that. And that's the first question. Quote, what is the entity of Myoho Renge Kyo? You couldn't get more to the center of everything than to ask that question, right? So Nichiren is posing this question, Shisaren Bo. Think about that, he's saying. Let's get right to the heart of the matter. So his answer is, all beings and their environments in any of the 10 worlds, in whatever life condition you find yourself in, are themselves entities of Myoho Renge Kyo. Great. Right? But for you advanced people, that should just go, oh yeah, right, everything. Everything, not just me, but my environment, my worldview, everything I'm in, this whole reality, quote unquote, that I am experiencing is Myoho Renge Kyo. You can just sit and meditate on that all day. For you beginners, hang on, it's going to make sense. Next question. Well, if so, then is it possible to say that all living beings, such as ourselves, are entities of the wonderful and difficult to understand law in its entirety? Another big statement. Okay, I get that we're me and my environment is all Myoho Renge Kyo. But does that mean that Myoho Renge Kyo is absolutely everything, even though I don't understand and experience everything? That's a different, right? It's one thing to say, I am Buddha-ness, I am suchness, I am a subset of the totality of all suchness. But it's another thing to say that the suchness that I experience is all suchness. That's huge. Answer? Of course. The sutra says, quote, this reality, the true aspect of all phenomena, which we already read, consists of the appearance, nature, so on and so forth, and their consistency from beginning to end. Those of you who've, even this beginners, when we do Gongyo and we read or recite the second chapter, the Hoben chapter, and it culminates with Nyoze so, Nyoze sho, Nyoze, right? That we repeat three times. Those are the 10 factors he's referring to. And I've got my website, I've got a PDF here. And there they are. The reality consists of the appearance, nature, entity, power, influence, internal cause, relation, latent effect, manifest effect, and their consistency from beginning to end. Now, I want you to consider that these 10 factors exist on the earth, in your body, in every molecule, in every atom, in every electron, quark, anything, any manifest thing has these 10 factors. Anything. So understand how deeply Myoho Rengekyo dissects suchness, everything. And all those 10 factors are the product of the process of Nidana from potential, or as I like to call it, quiescent energy, formations from the moment they begin, before they actually form something, formations sort out these 10 factors in order to then manifest, instantiate. And if you start digging in to each of those 10 factors, beginners, intermediates, advanced, any one of them, they could take you down a rabbit hole, so be careful. But at some point when you dig down the rabbit hole of appearance, the first one, you will have tremendous insights in our mundane world of what it means to use the word appearance. Because it varies, appearance. But altogether, it is appearance. From the way you look in the mirror to the instantiation itself, all of it is appearance, right? And that appearance has implications for what was there before it appeared. You're going to come across this a lot in Buddhism. The next one, nature. What is nature? Is nature the trees and the flowers and the deer and the animals outside? Okay, that's one definition. But each of those things has its own nature, more like tendencies and conditions. These tendencies and conditions in a certain grouping, you could say, are a nature. How does that nature develop? Where does that nature come from? And of course, that nature is only knowable to you and I through its appearance. So here we go with the second thing that's going to happen a lot in Buddhism, is this circular kind of loop of understanding. And the next one is entity. Well, we've already talked about that. Without suchness, we can't have tendencies and conditions. We can't have appearance. So of course, they're all part of the instantiation of anything and everything. So this, keep going. Okay. The great teacher Miao Lo comments on this as follows. Quote, the true aspect invariably manifests in all phenomena, and all phenomena invariably manifests in the 10 factors. The 10 factors invariably manifest in the 10 worlds, and the 10 worlds invariably manifest in life and its environment, which is what I was just explaining. Tendai commented, quote, "All phenomena consisting of the 10 factors, 10 worlds, and 3,000 realms are entities of the Lotus Sutra." What does that mean? What does he mean that all of these things we just talked about, the entity, suchness, tendencies and conditions, appearance, nature, the 10 factors, the 10 worlds, which are just different life conditions or perceptive realities of each of those 10 factors at any given moment, which are within themselves and span the three realms, 3,000 realms in a single moment. You see how all of this is coming back around to this perception of what it is we're experiencing that we call life? And Tendai is saying, these are all entities of the Lotus Sutra. Entities of the Lotus Sutra. So he's not saying that the Lotus Sutra is what creates all of these things. What he's saying is that Myoho Renge Kyo, the teaching of the Lotus Sutra, is the Dharma. The Dharma is the experience of all of this. The knowing experience of all of this, the perceptive, the who, the you that is experiencing the not you, the entirety of which you are simply in the flow of the Buddha-ness, the Myoho Renge Kyo. The great teacher Nanhui says, quote, question, what does Myoho Renge Kyo represent? Answer, Myo indicates that all living beings are Myo, or wonderful, and difficult to understand. Oh yeah. Ho indicates that all living beings are Ho, or the law. Tendai also says, quote, the law of all living beings is wonderful and difficult to understand, end quote. The processes that manifest the life that you and I experience, and the processes that you and I use in order to have this idea of an experience, and so on and so forth, are Myoho Renge Kyo. That is Buddha wisdom. That, when fully realized, is Buddha-ness, is your Buddha. It's huge. Question, if the entity of all living beings is the wonderful and difficult to understand law in its entirety, then are all the actions and their results that are associated with the nine worlds, from the world of hell up to that of bodhisattvas, in effect, entities of the wonderful and difficult to understand law? So does that mean that whatever world we're in, whether we're happy or sad, or struggling or angry or whatever, that's all part of the fundamental entity of suchness, our Buddhahood? Answer, the wonderful and difficult to understand principle, that is the essential nature of phenomena, possesses two aspects, the defiled aspect and the pure aspect. If the defiled aspect is operative, this is called delusion. If the pure aspect is operative, this is called enlightenment. Enlightenment constitutes the realm of Buddhahood, delusion constitutes the realms of ordinary mortals. Oof. That's it. That's it. That's the whole thing. The sufferings. Remember, Buddhism is about liberating ourselves from the sufferings of life. Life is a condition of delusion because of what? Attachments to a bunch of ephemeral stuff that we think is essential to keep us alive and make us happy. When our brains are wrapped around that idea, we don't see the big picture. And so our emotions run rampant. And our feelings get hurt, and we miss things, and we wish we had things, and we crave, and we cry. But that is still the realm of Buddhahood. See, this is what's so difficult to understand when you begin this practice, is that even your suffering is within the realm of, it's a subset. It's a filter that you're using that's obfuscating and mangling the truth. The truth in this case is clarity. Clarity that these things are all fun to play with, including our own lives as humans, because that's a manifestation of tendencies and conditions, but fundamentally, that's not who or what we are. We are this life force manifesting through this complex machine that gives us the ability to realize this very thing. That's why this life is so precious. Not because in and of itself a finger costs a lot of money, but because we have the ability with our minds to perceive a reality, quote unquote, of the true entity, the clear entity, the pure entity, the magnificence of this process that we are instantiating. Life itself, the process of life, far transcends all of the little baubles and quirks that we experience. That if we focus our lives on that which is constant, this whole beautiful and complex drama of the experience of life, with all of its pains and foibles and wonderment and amazement and beauty, we look at the whole kit and caboodle, it right away, just talking about it, it diminishes our little human avarices, attachments. It doesn't make them non-important. It simply shifts our focus from those things to the greater, larger picture. That's Buddha wisdom. So that's the hard and fast border he just gave us. When we chant to Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, we are chanting to invoke our higher sensibilities, our deeper perspective on what is essential for life to exist. Not just for our own, but that when we awaken to the engine of life, then contrary to what you might think, it doesn't negate the experience of being Sylvain or Bob or June or Jeff or John or whoever you are, or Martha or Betty or Sandra or whatever. It exalts it. It exalts it because it says that me, this little human potential, I can see all of it. I'm part of all of it. I create all of it. I'm part of the flow of something unfathomably immense. Wow. I guess this nail polish is not really that important. Right? So these two aspects, the deluded and the enlightened, are indeed two different phenomena, and yet both are workings of the principle, the one principle, that is, the essential nature of phenomena, or the true aspect of reality. This is what we've been talking about all along. It is like a piece of crystal. If the crystal is placed in the sun's rays, it will attract them and produce fire. But if it is placed in the moon's rays, it will produce water. The crystal is a single entity, but the effects it produces differ according to the circumstances. So this is that tendencies and conditions things, that the formations. The wonderful and difficult to understand principle of the true aspect of reality is like this. The wonderful and difficult to understand principle of the true aspect of reality is one, but if it encounters evil influences, it will manifest delusion, while if it encounters good influences, it will manifest enlightenment. Enlightenment means enlightenment to the essential nature of phenomena, and delusion, ignorance of it. So understand, again, this is a translation thing. Evil isn't a Marvel cartoon character. Evil isn't an impingement of other. It's not something it being imposed upon you. Evil is something of your own making, of that same engine of tendencies and conditions, of life conditions. You see why it's the one entity? And you see why so many philosophies, so many religions of the world, especially religions, work so diligently to take these ideas of bad and good, evil and good, and work to push them out of you, to make them forces that play upon you as though they're separate from you. This is evil. That's ridiculous. I heard, this is a silly aside, but on this very subject, what we're talking about is life condition. And there's a very simple example I heard a long time ago, and I don't know if it'll help you, but it's coming to mind, so I'll share it with you. If you take a two-year-old child, 18 months, if you will, when a child first begins to walk and it stumbles around and it flails its arms in the air trying to figure out how to negotiate moving on its 2 feet, it's very easily stumbled or just, you know, you can put anything in front of that child and it'll either just fall on its butt or trip over it and fall down. Wah, right? You could take a bag of bricks and put it in front of that child and it can't get around, can't get over, it just falls down. Or it may try to get around. As the child gets more confident on its feet, it can get around it. And if you put that same bag of bricks in front of an adult who's far more developed, the adult will either pick up the bag of bricks and move it aside to get it out of the way or just step over it, right? Not a big deal. Well, this is the nature of obstacles, right? So if you let the obstacle stop your progress and you just sit there right into adulthood and you die in front of that bag of bricks, you haven't surmounted that obstacle. Even though you had the capacity, then that influence in you that's kept you from even trying to surmount that obstacle, that's evil. That's evil not from elsewhere. That's evil not impinged on you. That's not the evil of people laughing at you for not getting around the bricks. That's you. That's you choosing not to get off your butt and simply get around that obstacle. That's evil. In Buddhism, that is what evil is. Your own unwillingness, not inability, your own unwillingness is what becomes your inability. Inability is a choice. Your inability is felt, fed by the delusion that you cannot. That's the evil. Right? So this is all of Buddhism. You want to be awakened, you want to be enlightened, you want to experience your Buddha nature, so do it. The only reason you're not is because you're not. This is why I say all the time, Buddhism isn't a religion. It's a self-realizing perceptive. It's a perceptive skill, if you will. Okay? Continuing with Nichiren here. It's like the case of a person who in a dream sees himself performing various good and evil actions. After he wakes up and considers the matter, he realizes that it was all a dream produced by his own mind. This mind of his corresponds to the single principle of the essential nature of phenomena, the true aspect of reality. While the good and evil that appeared in the dream correspond to enlightenment and delusion, when one becomes aware of this, it is clear that one should discard the ignorance associated with evil and delusion and take us as one's basis the awakening that is characterized by goodness and enlightenment. The complete and final teaching on Perfect Enlightenment Sutra declares, quote, "The beginningless illusions and ignorance that beset all living beings are all produced by the perfectly enlightened mind of the Thus Come One," end quote. So if you just read that for the first time, that would be upsetting. It's very confusing. And the only reason it's confusing is because we tend to categorize everything as a separate thing. But hopefully, at this point, after reading everything we have and my alliteration on it, this makes perfect sense. The great teacher Tendai, in his Great Concentration and Insight, states, "Ignorance or illusions are in themselves enlightenment to the essential nature of phenomena. But due to the influence of delusions, enlightenment changes into ignorance." End quote. The great teacher Miao Lo comments on this as follows, quote, "Enlightenment has no separate entity, but completely depends upon ignorance. And ignorance has no separate entity, but completely depends upon enlightenment," end quote. So this is an experiential, perceptive decision. Is this really something painful, or am I making it painful because it's of the same entity that my enlightenment comes from? My enlightenment is my essential life, my instantiation is amazing, precious. You make a choice. I don't want to be ignorant. I don't want to experience this pain. This pain is a delusion because it is formed of a misunderstanding that all of this is enlightenment. Once I understand that everything I experience, including my own distinction is enlightenment, then what is there to suffer? Anything I suffer is a creation of my own mind. It's a delusion. It takes me away from the truth that I am not that, that that is not something impinged upon me, that that is something I'm creating, and I need not do that. Easily said, much harder to achieve. This is why we practice to constantly remind our human mind that it doesn't have to succumb to that. Ignorance is a state of delusion that must be cut off, whereas enlightenment is the state that one must manifest. How then can we say that they are a single entity? To resolve doubts on this point, one should have a clear grasp of the passages that have been quoted here. The example of the dream given in the 95th volume of the Treatise on the Great Perfection of Wisdom and the Tendai School's examples of the piece of crystal cited above are very interesting illustrations. Further proof of the truth that ignorance and enlightenment are one in essence is found in the passage in the Lotus Sutra that reads, quote, "These phenomena are part of an abiding law, and the characteristics of the world are constantly abiding," end quote. Great Perfection of Wisdom says, quote, "Enlightenment and ignorance are not different things, not separate things. To understand this is what is called the middle way," end quote. And on that, yeah, we're going to take a little break and we'll continue in part two. Thanks for participating. I hope this is useful study for you, deepens your practice. If you need further clarification, that's what the comment session's for. Let me know. If there's a particular word or concept I hit on that you'd like me to dive deeper in, I can do a separate video on that. So please let me know. And other than that, anything you can do to support this Sangha, this channel, is tremendously appreciated. If you don't have time to sit down and watch these videos, I transcribe all of them into my podcast, the Buddhahood Podcast. The Buddhahood Podcast. Blah, 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 mouth. And that's available all over the place. So stay well. I'll see you in the next one.